Right now, we're going to talk about keeping your brain healthy. So this is the latest book that I've finished. I try to do book reviews. Last year, I rekindled my one book a month pledge, and I was able to do that. A book a month. I can't read, like Tim Kalishaw, 50 books in a year. I'm happy if I read 12. And I'm also happy to report that I've now almost read 3 books, and it's early March. So okay. I'm way ahead of schedule.
All right.
And I was happy to know this, that when I was talking to our buddy Bob Sturm at the Super Bowl, we were talking about books we were reading, and he said that he was going back and forth between 2 or 3 books. And Gordo, I think you do this too. And I've recently started doing this where I'll have 2 or 3 books going at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bob said, people watch TV shows, you know, 3, 4 at a time. They stagger them.
Right.
What's wrong with staggering books? And I said, yeah, okay, good. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one that has 3 books on my nightstand, and it just depends what mood I'm in.
Correct.
Which one I'm going to read.
Right. Whether it's erotica or erotica with fantasy themes.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Switch up.
Just whatever mood you're in. So the longer book that I'm in the middle of right now is that book about sports in the 70s and what a transitional and transformative decade that was. And this is by our buddy Michael McCambridge, who we've had on the show a couple of times.
Great.
It's a great book. I'll be ready to review that after our spring break vacation. But the book I'm going to review now is the book that I just finished this week called The Age-Proof Brain by Mark Milstein. The Age-Proof Brain. And if you want, I tweeted a picture of the cover if you want more information or want to go look for it. So it's about how to keep your brain healthy. And what's really interesting about this is that brain imaging is at the heart of the research used in this book. And it's really incredible. You can see what a healthy brain looks like and what an unhealthy brain looks like based on what a person is doing in their life or to themselves because of this sophisticated brain imaging we now have. So a healthy brain is plump and full of blood rushing to the important parts of it, the prefrontal cortex and all of these parts of our brain that help us in decision making and keep our memory sharp and stave off all these brain related diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia, anxiety, everything that gets to us. Well, these healthy brains just look healthy, and an unhealthy brain is shriveled up. And it's got parts of the brain, the 4 important lobes where blood is not coursing through there. And so we know we can do very simple research. And I thought one of the most eye-opening parts of the book was when they described that the best brain scans, the healthiest looking brains, are those of Buddhist monks. Happy people and happy brains have more blood flowing to the prefrontal cortex. Monks spend most of their day meditating. They have very low stress, and they spend 8 to 10 hours a day meditating, and that is one of the best things you can do for brain health, even if it's just 10 minutes a day. None of us can do 8 hours a day.
No.
But even if you just meditate for 10 minutes a day, it's amazing what that does to your brain.
What do you think the average American, how many feel stress at some point every day, and they feel like they're stressed out? I'd say most, I mean,
yes,
80% of us. I don't know, maybe more,
probably more. And they talk about that in the book, how we are battling stress today in a way that none of our ancestors ever had to put up with.
Yeah.
And I thought this was interesting. It was part of the book that reminded me of something that we talked about recently, and it ties into that stress topic. We were doing this during our AMA at TicketStock, and I think we may have even talked about it on the show, George, when you were talking about all the negative blowback you got for your Luca HSO. And you're not alone. We have all at this station experienced lots of negative blowback for something that we have said over the years, a sports opinion or whatever it was.
Sure.
And I think somebody asked us at the AMA, what kind of feedback have you guys gotten on your shortening of your show going to 3 hours? And I think you guys would agree that 95% of it has been positive, and it's been people saying congratulations on the shorter hours. You all deserve it. We're so happy for you.
Yeah.
If this is what keeps you around longer, great. We're all for it. But 5% is you guys are lazy. You guys are done. Blah, blah, blah. And as you mentioned, George, it's the negative feedback that sticks with us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, the book addresses just that. And they talk about you can get 100 people commenting on something you're doing. 99 of them can be positive, one negative, but the one negative sticks with you. And they say we have our ancestors to thank for that. The one bit of negative feedback activates our fight or flight. Our brains see that as a threat. So the body releases cortisol, which is good in small doses, but today our stressors are everywhere, and too much of that is bad for our brain. So the reason that we all dwell on negative feedback goes way back to caveman days, because we perceive that as a threat to us. That person is sending us what we see as a negative or threatening email.
Yeah.
And our body reacts. Our brain reacts.
What does your caveman brain think about? Hey, look, there's 100 berries over there we could eat. And there's also a lion approaching on the right.
Right.
Well, of course you're going to take that one thing much more seriously than the 100 good things over here to the side.
Yeah. Yes.
And if you're overcome by that, you can see why sometimes when we have a story, man, what caused that person to do that? Repeated examples of that, I would think, would cause someone to strike out in a really way that does not fit logic whatsoever.
Right. That's why it's very healthy for you to cut off the feedback loops, you know, try to get away from any of that stuff, or the negative people in your life who just fill your daily life with all these negative comments, because happy people and people who keep their stress level low have the healthiest brains, and so they are much more likely to avoid Alzheimer's, dementia, memory loss, any of that kind of stuff.
I've tried to do that, but it's I think it's difficult for everybody.
It is.
Because it's the one, whatever it is in your life that's causing some stress, that's the one that will keep poking you.
Yes.
Throughout the day, whatever it is.
Right. And it's not just feedback. You're right. It's something, whatever negative in your life is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Could be at work, could be whatever. Could be a relationship, something like that. One of the main things that jumped out at me about this book, again, called The Age-Proof Brain, is that the best things for memory and brain health, number one, and he comes back to this repeatedly, learn something new every day. It greases our neuro pathways. Learning to play an instrument, learning to speak a different language, simply reading a book that teaches you just even one new thing a day, that makes new connections between brain cells and it keeps your brain firing.
Yeah.
Just learn something new every day, whether it's a new chord on a guitar or a new fact about your brain.
Yeah. That one's hard, too. I've tried to challenge myself doing that, and then after a few days, it's easy not to stay on it. That's a really hard thing to stay on, but I could see the advantages of it.
What would you guys like to learn? Is there anything on your short list of something you've always wanted to do or get good at that you have not quite tackled?
For me, it's those two things. It's, you know, I've always wanted to get good at the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And so since reading this book, I'm trying to pick up my guitar at least 15 minutes every day. And it's amazing how much I lose, but how much motor memory does come back. But I'm far from being able to play the guitar. So it's that and learning a language.
Yeah. What are you working on? Have you decided?
I haven't delved back into that. I kept my subscription to Rosetta Stone because I was trying to learn French for a trip over there a few years ago, and I just kept that. And so I think I will maybe go back to that, since I have a little bit of a base in French, and maybe Spanish is the smart one to learn.
Yeah.
Because we use it a lot here in Texas especially. But you're right, George. It's hard to be disciplined to make yourself learn something new every day, because our tendency is to fall into what's comfortable and what we know how to do.
Yeah. And it gets tougher, too, as you get older. One of mine was, okay, learn a new song every day. And I was great about it for about 3 or 4 days. I was like, okay, I don't want to learn this.
Yeah, and I proved I could do it. So.
Yeah, and I don't know. I was just kind of overwhelmed by that, and that started stressing me out. Yeah. So I was just like, crap.
No, it's the eternal battle between comfort and novelty or adventure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the old quote of, when I was young, I used to try to sneak out of the house to go to parties, and now I try to sneak out of parties to go back to the house.
Exactly. But maybe the biggest takeaway is that I learned that the brain craves learning. So me learning that little fact helped my brain and helped connect brain cells. It craves something new, so break up your routine. He's also big on the best foods for brain health. There's a whole chapter about that, and he boils it down to the big five, because there's this incredible gut-brain connection. There's also a heart-brain connection. There's all sorts of connections that we don't really think about, mainly because our brain is so out of sight, out of mind, for lack of a better term. You know, we pay more attention to our hair than our brain, because we can look in the mirror and see our hair, but we can't look in the mirror and see our brain. So we're more obsessed with combing our hair.
Not everyone can look in the mirror and see their hair.
Well, yes, those that are follically challenged cannot do that. My apologies to those.
Okay, what foods are we rooting for here, Gordo? Whipped cream,
hamburgers got to be number one on the list. Is that
waffles.
The number one brain food?
Here are his big five best brain food, best foods for brain health. Okay. Number one.
Come on, cake. Come on, cake.
Fatty fish like salmon.
Okay, we can accept salmon.
Avocados.
You bet.
Mm. Nuts. And guacamole, okay. As long as it's with chips.
Nuts.
Oh, boy, you've had a lot of them in your mouth.
Especially walnuts. Oh. And I know this hits home for you, Gordo, and you should be great here because you love to put nuts in your mouth.
Salty nuts.
Blueberries are number four.
I love those.
And cruciferous veggies like broccoli and cauliflower.
Cruciferous?
Or however you pronounce that.
That sounds good to me.
How do you pronounce it?
I have no idea.
I think it's cruciferous.
No way that the word.
No body.
Raw.
Cruciferous?
And by the way, raw, we had that debate the other day because I thought cooking your vegetables was, but he says no, it's got to be raw.
Wait, I got to eat raw broccoli?
Yeah, raw broccoli. In fact, he said raw broccoli sprouts are the best.
That's hard to say, by the way. Raw broccoli.
It's better raw.
Broccoli is?
I think so.
You're crazy.
I think when you cook it, it brings out the stink.
What?
I think all veggies are better, taste better cooked, but they're better for you raw.
I don't know about that.
So salmon, avocados, nuts, blueberries, and broccoli are your big five.
Okay.
And pay attention to the gut-brain connection, which makes a lot of sense. You know, I got this from my dad. When I'm stressed mentally, it refers in my gut. That's when I start getting, you know, gut cramps and stomach aches and tooting. There's also a very strong exercise-brain connection. He says the miracle drug for the brain is exercise.
Okay.
In a large way, because it strengthens the immune system and your heart, and that's great for the brain. And studies show that those who exercise drop their odds for brain-related illnesses by as much as 90%.
Wow.
Another big thing is the sleep-brain connection.
Uh-oh.
Because, I know, this kills all three of us. When you sleep, that is when your brain cleans itself. It files away stuff it won't need in other parts of the brain. It gets rid of brain trash like plaques and tangles that lead to dementia and other brain diseases. So you really need to get your 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night for the sake of your brain, because that's when it gets healthy.
Okay.
He also talks about your environment. For example, those who live within 500 feet of a highway have greatly increased odds of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, because of all the toxins from car fumes.
Mm.
So keep in mind, your environment also impacts your brain. Plastics, I think we all know about plastic poisoning these days.
Well, it's everywhere.
You really have to get away from using plastics. Household cleaners can mess with your brain. And he's also got a lot of memory tips, short-term memory tips, George, you were talking about this the other day. If you want to remember something, write it down.
Yeah.
That sticks in your brain. Or spend 7 seconds thinking about it. If somebody tells you their name and you want to remember it, spend 7 seconds dwelling on that name, and it's most likely to stick in your medulla.
Okay. And there is something to the, maybe it's like writing it down when you repeat it. Jim's your name. Okay.
Yeah.
Jim, we're trying to do, Jim, is we're Jim and Jim.
Jim.
And one other chapter.
That's what Grego is doing. He's just repeating.
And one other chapter, he talks about social engagement. Very important for the brain to be socially engaged.
So Twitter's good for me. Okay.
And I don't know about Twitter.
No, real face-to-face.
I think maybe actually having dinner with people and talking to them is what he's talking about. And very important to treat hearing loss, something else that affects the three of us since we've worn headphones for 30-plus years. Get a hearing aid as soon as you need it, because hearing loss is strongly linked to Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, because you just don't engage if you can't hear.
That's why I always protect my hearing, and I don't understand why people don't take their hearing seriously.
I know. I don't either, man. It makes no sense to me why they don't.
Don't you talk to me about it. I've been begging you to get in-ear monitors. Begging you. Because I love you, Giorgio, and I don't want you to have to deal with hearing loss.
I know. I've already damaged it.
Well, that, okay, but you need
to. So it can't get any worse.
No, stop. Stop it. Stop it.
So that is the Cliff's Notes version of The Age-Proof Brain. That's my book of the month. I highly recommend it because he goes into much greater detail in all of this. But it's not too medically or scientifically heavy that you can't understand it. The Age-Proof Brain by Mark Milstein is my book of the month.